Let's bring back play. Maybe you've heard the phrase lately. That verse from a Canadian government participation ad has been going through my head a lot lately, and I've been thinking about how, as a culture, we've got to a place in time where we have to create ads to encourage children to play and to encourage adults to let them. It seems I'm not the only one thinking about this. Yesterday, in yesterday's National Post, there was an article on such a thing that I've been thinking about, where a principal in New Zealand is going against the grain and allowing children to play in the schoolyard again, whatever form that takes. There the children climb trees, make forts, and whatever else comes to their mind with the materials at hand and the time available. It reminded me of my own childhood, growing up in a shipbuilding village in Nova Scotia, and the free-range attitude of the parents and teachers that surrounded us. We built forts, played kick the can and hide-and-seek, climbed trees, often till it was so dark that we finally couldn't see anyone anymore, and we just gave up playing and went inside. Just the other day, my sister Kim, who still lives in Nova Scotia, reminded me that on rainy summer days, Mom would send us out in the rain in our bathing suits to play. Bringing back play is a very good idea, not just for children, but for every one of us of all ages. And bringing back play is going to be the touchstone of what I'll be talking about today. We're all in this together. So how do we lose the ability to play? Many reasons are obvious, but one is that there's a risk attached to play, and in our litigious, fearful of being hurt society, we don't want to take chances. In my own days of freely roaming the neighborhood, some of the risks we took were dangerous and not well thought out, and there could have been, and almost were, some very serious consequences. In many ways, I was lucky, and so were my sisters, that the worst that came out was a few broken bones and skinned knees. But we experienced so much that was valuable and life-affirming. In the National Post article, the author writes what the principal, quotes the principal, saying, "He knew children might get hurt, and that was exactly the point. Perhaps if they were freed from the cotton wool in which their 21st century parents had them swaddled, the students can develop some resilience, use their imaginations, and solve problems on their own." On another front, which is related, I spent my last 2 weeks in one of the best schools in Calgary for integrating art curriculum. And it's a gem of a school where the artists and teachers work together to create interesting, engaging, and creative enhancing projects that meet both curriculum and creativity benchmarks for the children. Yet, as good as it was, is, and with creativity being front and center in many forms as possible, when I was sitting in the library, I overheard an 8-year-old come in who'd been renewing a library book on how to draw for a three different renewals. And she's decided at 8 that it's futile to take out any more drawing books from her school library because she has no unstructured time to draw in, and it's making her sad to see the books sitting there unopened. And so to me, that was a kind of a sober reminder. We think that we're giving kids all these opportunities and giving ourselves all these opportunities, but something's missing. So the other danger is that in pursuing art and creativity, the other thing is we're herd animals, and it really comes to play in our ideas of like giving kids things that are like video games and things like that, and it keeps them away from just the unstructured time. But it's also a problem for all of us. It's a problem for adults, too. It's not uncommon to have to go back and recover what was missing. Something that's been valuable. We call it throwing the baby out with the bathwater when I was a kid. Because the water got so dirty, you couldn't find the baby. But in university in the late 1970s, I was, myself, in my art degree, I was taught to look at art separate from any other connections to other philosophies or experiences, such as spirituality, play, or healing, to name just a few. This was real art. Over time, I realized that this definition, like pigeonholing art and artists, was limiting and not really reflective of actual artists' experiences. Art emerges from life. Why wouldn't it be play or profoundly spiritually experience? And I think that's part of what happens. We start isolating things into their little corners instead of letting them overlap each other. There's what I discovered afterwards was, if you know Kandinsky, he actually wrote a book called The Spirituality of Art. I was taught to copy him, but I wasn't learning that he actually spoke out for against art for art's sake, and he was putting music into visual form. Now, Kandinsky was so playful with his art that actually he was one of the artists that was, he started the Bauhaus School in Germany and was actually closed down during the Second World War because of his freedom. Giving up art, so I ended up giving up art. And giving up art gave me the chance to discover a larger world of creating for myself, free of other ideas of what art should look like. My way of giving up art was to start to create dolls. So this is my first one. It was done in a spontaneous creation-making workshop. When I was making her, I was sort of talked into going into this workshop with a friend, and I couldn't get two legs. And when I was a child, we used to make dolls out of wool. And she's got like ties in her. And I said, okay, I don't have time to argue with you. Be strange. And she turned into having one leg, and it turned into a mermaid. And I had never been that connected to the artistic self. And when I made her, it was like all of a sudden she was a mermaid. And I was born in Newfoundland, grew up in Nova Scotia, and was like connecting to some sense of self. And after I made her, I was so taken with this personal symbolism and not caring what anyone else thought. The first thought after I finally got her made was inside the critic said, yeah, right, why don't you write your professors and tell them you're making dolls now? And I took that as a thing to think about. So what in the book, Old Woman at Play, I found a book about a doll maker, Adele Wiseman, who won a Governor General Award, she's Canadian, in the 1960s for her book Crackpot. She writes about creativity as seen in the writing, her writing process and her mother's doll making. Here was a heartfelt approach to art that I hadn't had, art from the heart. Instead of the duality of what I learned in school, where this is good, this lives, this dies, this is good art, this is bad art, there was this ever-changing, forming, reforming into new forms. And one of the things that she writes is one of the characteristics I've noticed in creative people is that they retain something about them still alive of all the ages in which they have passed. It is though impressed by society to turn in the attributes of childhood in exchange for those of adolescence, they have secretly held something back, clinging to the continuing sense of the validity of the childhood space. And so on, when they're supposed to turn in adolescence into adulthood, they keep some of it back. They have somehow refused to pass through life as tourists. They may be plagued by irreconcilable elements, etc., but they often retain that childlike, yes, and sometimes childish too, these creators. There's this sense of things to be made in search of their maker. In the in Matthew, in the Bible, there says, this is very unusual in any kind of belief system, is at the time the disciples came to Jesus and said, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? So you can imagine what kind of answer they're expecting. And he calls a little child to him, and they were kept trying to keep the children away from him. He placed the child among the disciples. Imagine doing this at a meeting. And he said, I tell you, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. And so art has become for me a way to respond to the wonder of the moment. Each thing I create is an expression of a feeling, encounter with nature, is not meant to be realistic. It just is. It's just kind of like when everyone was sort of dancing at the beginning. There's to dance and play creatively, creativity into existence, something new that's kind of to connect to the creative world around us, it's very beautiful, is I found tucked away in the book of Proverbs is a third creation story. And we often know the first two, but this one is notably different from the first two in the book of Genesis, as this version is written from a feminine perspective. So it's Proverbs 8, 22 to 31, where the female voice, hears an ancient voice portrayed as coming into existence before the earth even began, was formed. She, sometimes referred to as Lady Wisdom or Sophia, describes herself as the maker's constant companion throughout every stage of the creative process. And without her presence, the world can't exist. The work cannot be done. There's two lines in Proverbs which is really interesting. It says, I was constantly at his side, like a workman or artisan or little child. I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world and delighting in humankind. It is the pairing of these two ideas, master craftsman with little child, that the truth of her nature lies. I remember listening to Quirks and Quarks in CBC, and Bob McDonald was talking to a scientist about a new discovery, and he was so delighted with sharing this discovery that during the interview, he giggled. It is this delight in what we do, combined with years of practice and service coming together, that creates the whole. And that's what had happened. I only had half the story. I more or less had a very how to do it, but not the delight and wonder and why you want to do it. So I had to go further looking for it, trying to develop it, and that kind of led me on my journey. So a couple things I'll just say to you in passing is, one is when you come, one of the things is rediscover it. I thought it just interesting that next week you were going to have a speaker who was going to talk about the cave art. And there's some pictures for you. Because here we are, barely surviving, and we're creating art. And then we tell ourselves, we don't have time for art. We have people like with the, I also think that the first thing when they left Egypt, when the Hebrews left Egypt, God gives them all this intricate art to make, to carry around in a desert. So if you think that you don't have time for art, think again. Those guys were really in survival mode. So keep it simple. I used sticks and chart and paint ink. That's what we'll be doing downstairs. Reframe it. We've got some frames downstairs where you start looking at things a little bit differently. What's the measuring stick you use? You often have the wrong measuring stick. I'm telling yourself that you've got, if you're not doing it, you have the wrong measuring stick. Keep it open and use odd materials. So what being an artist, so I'll just close with what being an artist means to you and how you choose to express your innate, uniquely you creativity is yours to discover. I want to thank you for your time and allowing me to share my thoughts, but I want to quote Robbie Robertson in his song Golden Feather. Please take from what I've said what's worth keeping, and with a breath of kindness, blow the rest away. Thank you.